Welcome back to On the Path, where we explore all things Witcher and everything that that involves. It is the day after Thanksgiving, which means almost nothing to you, Lucy, does it?
No, it doesn't really. But because I have some American friends now, like yourself and a couple of other people in my Twitch, etc., I do feel like I was kind of involved. But how was the day for you?
It was okay. It was fine. I did my cooking. I'm tired. Didn't get a lot of sleep. But yeah, but you know, we're here to talk about The Witcher. And is that somebody else here? Who is that?
Hello. Yeah, my name's Specimen. I'm involved today in the podcast. I play Gwent on Twitch. Big fan of The Witcher world. I've been even reading the books recently, which for me is pretty impressive. I don't really read very often. So
there we go.
Yeah, really happy to be here.
Where are you at in the books?
Well, I've been reading the second set of short stories. Is it Sword of Destiny?
Yeah, it is.
I've been reading that book for about a year now, so not making great progress. But I did actually read the Doodoo short story the other week. And I read it in one go, but then I've not like actually picked the book up since. It's just a habit thing for me. If I can get into the habit of it, I'm sure I'd race through. I want to make sure I'm ahead of the Netflix series, making sure I'm always one step ahead.
Okay, there you go. So yeah, that's Eternal Flame. Did you like that one?
Yeah, really loved it. Obviously, having met Doodoo in Witcher 3 and being a fan of the Gwent standalone game where Doodoo's got a card, really interesting to find out more about his backstory. I really enjoyed it, I have to say. He's a bit of a legend, Doodoo, I have to say.
Yeah, the Dopplers are really fun in the game. I was about to say something, but Novigrad is coming. Lucy, aren't you in the second book also?
No, so I'm exactly the same as you, Spessy. Like, I'm not a massive reader, but I really want to read these books. So I'm still on The Last Wish, and I'm still on, like, you know, at least the first quarter of the book. I keep going back to it every now and then, and I've been listening to the audiobooks as well, which I find a little bit easier to stick with. So yeah, I'm so, so far behind.
The audiobooks, Peter Kenny is...
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, it's something else how... into it he gets, which I don't listen to that many audiobooks. Everybody gets into it the way he does. I can understand why they're so popular.
I love his Geralt voice as well. He gives him a proper like northern accent.
Yeah, and isn't Ciri a little Scottish?
Oh really? I thought that far.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. You're in the first book. Duh. Okay. Well, spoiler for you there, if you ever get there. Yeah,
I think Scottish.
Geralt. Get a Scottish Geralt. I think it's something.
It's
like
not
that.
The best Scottish accent I've ever heard, I have to say.
Well, no. It's exaggerated, is what it is. I don't actually try to do the actual accents. You just kind of do them just very exaggerated. You know, we're not getting the the resident Scotsman here. You got to tap your arse. So. Yeah, it's a little bit. And I haven't been warmed up to it. And I'm not a voice actor either, believe it or not. So, yeah. Can you do a Scottish accent, though, Spessy?
Prime Scottish haggis.
That's quite good.
Okay.
It's not bad. My sister lives in Edinburgh, so I need to go visit and practice those still.
Okay, there
Edinburgh's
you go.
Edinburgh's definitely the nicest accent from Scotland, I think.
You're not Glasgow or Glaswegian?
No, I like the Edinburgh one. But then I get a lot of people telling me that I sound Scottish, but obviously I'm not from Scotland. But
is that a huge insult?
It's not huge, but I know, like, if somebody says it to me around my friends, they'll go, oh.
Well, that would be like if someone said, hey, you sound like you're from Oklahoma. I'd be like, all right, we're going to fight now. I Texans don't like Oklahomans. I realize that probably just went over y'all's head completely.
Yeah, no clue.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, well, there you go. Irish to Scottish would be Texas to Oklahoma.
Okay.
And Texas to Louisiana. And Texas to everywhere else. We just don't like anybody else. Okay, there you go. Well, we beat around the bush here a little bit. But again, Spessy, it is a blast to have you here. Super excited as we continue the main story of The Witcher 3. But first off, a kind of blanket spoiler warning that I kind of already did some. Kind of goes towards everything. We'll give a little warning when it happens. But again, if you're going into this completely naked or first off, just be careful. And also, a special warning here, a little trigger warning for this and even future episodes over miscarriage, domestic violence, domestic abuse. The Bloody Baron quest is very, very heavy. So again, if that is something you are unfamiliar with this quest, just be on the lookout for that. With all that being said, let's get started with Family Matters. The Baron has enlisted Geralt into helping him find a missing mother and daughter, be Tamara and Anna. A fight appears to have broken out in Anna's room, and the scent of wine leads Geralt to find a protective amulet placed under the floor. So the Baron says that it's either this Peller or a witch would be with whom to speak with. And when this fight kind of breaks out, or when he tells the Baron that this fight broke out, Baron says he's drunk and does not remember anything about that night. It was this expensive Ervolus wine that must have been his, though. And I saw this note in the Witcher Wiki that apparently this is Geralt's favorite drink, but I don't remember where that came from, and it didn't give a...
It does sort of ring a bell, yeah. I sort of remember that from Blood and Wine.
Okay, is that what it's from? Because it's definitely a Toussaint wine.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Okay, so are either of y'all big wine fans? Y'all have a preference in your wine?
Not massively. I do like a glass of wine. I'm going to make some mulled wine tomorrow, which I'm quite looking forward to. I don't know, have you tried that before?
Never heard of it.
Have you not?
I do like mulled wine, to be fair. When I was at university, when I was like 18, I used to go to Tesco and buy like £3 bottle of rosé. I used to buy a couple of them for my pre-drinks. I remember like I would be like sipping on it while I was in the shower and all that sort of stuff.
Whoa. But
those days are long gone, unfortunately. I'm a bit more of a classy drinker now.
Okay. No, I used to do the same. Like we would have, not the shower, but we would get a bottle of wine each before we would go out. And I just think, no, if I had a bottle of wine now, I would be asleep. I wouldn't be going out for a whole night after that.
So this isn't like fortified wine? It's just regular like rosé wine?
Just regular wine, yeah.
Yeah, just whatever's the cheapest.
Okay. Yeah.
Highest percentage.
Yeah, Boone's yeah. Farm is the big one here. It's like $3 a bottle. It's incredibly sweet, and it's the thing that the 21-year-old college kids get, and it's just, there we go. Get fucking blasted off Boone's Farm. So I guess my wine would be a Bordeaux, and I don't mean to try to class it up a little bit there, but Bordeaux is my favorite kind of wine. Not white wine. I can't do white wine. I can only cook with it.
Yeah, I quite like a white wine. I think that would probably be my favorite. I don't know specifically what white wine, though.
Okay, not like a Grigio or something?
Probably, yeah. I just honestly, I have a friend who's really good with wine, and I just get what she gets.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's an easy drinker right there.
Yeah, but... and also in this bit, the Baron uses my new favorite word for being drunk, as he describes himself as being marinated.
Okay, that is pretty good.
That's my favorite now.
Marinated, okay. Yeah, I'll be stealing that one for sure. But not in the shower. I've never drank in the shower, though, I gotta say. So it's very impressive there, Spessy. The Baron gives a final warning about this Peller, though. Rumor has it that he killed his own father and went batty. Now he sees ghosts and plows his goat. So a big reason that I wanted you on today, Spessy, was you have an affinity for the Peller, right?
Yeah, like, I'm not exactly sure how it happened, to be honest, but... I mean, having played through The Witcher 3 recently, he's a bit of a character, isn't he? And that plowing his goat line particularly stands out with his goat princess. But it all just came about as within Gwent, the standalone card game, I only played Northern Realms. And that sort of dates back to when I played Witcher 3. Northern Realms was the starter deck, so it was just my favorite faction from then. And there's one key word in Gwent called a purify, which Northern Realms was the only faction that didn't have one, but the Peller was like the neutral card that did it. So I would have a Peller in almost all of my decks, and slowly but surely people in my chat just started really to like the Peller. We named him the Envy Peller, made a little emote out of him, and then as a bit of fun, I ordered a display picture of a Peller, which is actually sat on my wall right next to me, so he became a bit of a mascot from then on out, really. But he's a bit of a character in The Witcher 3, the goat plowing line in particular.
Yeah, he's got these chicken feet lined across... Yeah. His chest, and that just always sticks out to me. And there's this band called Chickenfoot, and I've been obsessed with that name because it's just funny to hear and say Chickenfoot. But now I think he's just gonna be plowing his goat. But do y'all think he actually plows his goat?
I don't know.
Is he plowing princess?
I think he does.
You don't think it's just an ugly rumor?
Nah, I think it's just the reality of it. I don't think rumors like that, like there's no smoke without fire, you know what I mean? I think something's going on there.
That's fair.
The old man in the shack with his goat named Princess.
Also, he speaks about himself in the third person, which I always find quite unsettling.
It's very, well, crazy guy in a shack that has a goat and may or may not have killed his father. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
I guess it fits. Well, we're off to see said Peller, the wonderful Peller. Oh, look. Who's outside but more angry locals? And because we played this as jerk-ass chose violence, Geralt, these blokes want to avenge their comrades from the inn. Did y'all kill them as well?
Yeah, so in my playthrough, I had been happy fun Geralt, so I got a decision here rather than it going straight to violence. And you can still choose to kill them, which I think I did, but your other option is to give them some better advice on how to help their friend get better. So you can get away without killing anyone, but I definitely did choose to kill them. And I think I remember correctly, this was the first big fight where I proper struggled. Like, I think I died 4 or 5 times. Because, you know, when you get a group of people like this and one of them will go sit back with a crossbow.
Yeah, yeah.
And, oh, it's so hard. But, yeah, I definitely ended up killing all of them.
Yeah, I always tend to invest in Axie for whatever reason. So
yeah.
I just axe him away, mate. Like, it's honestly so many dialogue options. It just makes it kind of a no-brainer for you. Like, yeah, I'll just use Axie. I'm not sure if they all leave, because a lot of the time when there's a big group, you use Axie and then they'll go, fuck, he's using magic, get him.
Yeah.
So not exactly sure how that one ends up, but definitely any opportunity to use Axie, I take it, really.
In every game, especially Fallout, like charisma and all that, I try to do it where it's, oh, I want the most options. We don't just have to kill. So now that I think about it, I bet I did do that, because I think you needed like Delusion 2 or something to do it. And yeah. I definitely would have pumped everything in there to do that. So I like to think that I would have done that as well. One side quest from here, there weren't many, was the Ciri's Room side quest, where you can go check out Ciri's Room. I don't know why you wouldn't do that, but in case you didn't, Geralt can go check out this room and finds a toy that belonged to Gretka, this massive spinning top that looks as big as her entire upper body. And what was most interesting to me this go around again was a nice shout out to Lydia van Bredevoort, this book on the table that is called The Natural Obscurity of Curses. And I'm guessing that name doesn't really ring a bell to y'all, does it? Except maybe the Gwent card.
Yeah, she recently got a Gwent card, so
okay.
I know a little bit about her. She's got like half of her face is pretty and the other half is slightly skeletal.
Spoiler here, and this will be some spoilers for season 2. It's not a big one, because she has been cast in season 2. And I won't say what she's doing beyond that. But yeah, the bottom part of her face is basically skeletal. It's not really there. And so that's an illusion that's covering that up. And so like in the Gwent card, I think it's, is it like a piece of a plant or something that's blocking it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's kind of blocking it. And she's also in the Imperial Diviner card, where the crystal ball, where Ciri's looking at it.
Really?
That's actually her, because if you look at it, you can see the skull behind the ball. The ball is blocking the skull.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was a really kind of cool shout out before that they didn't say like, hey, look, it's Lydia van Bredevoort. So that's a good one there. But yeah, it's interesting that this book is here. Ciri must have been reading up on these curses, but it doesn't mean anything to us now. But beyond that, Gretka remains just the absolute most adorable and informs Geralt that Ciri left abruptly and to help a friend. And I felt really bad for her that Ciri left.
I know, she's a total sweetheart. And then she's made the comment that Ciri carved the toy for her when she was sad one day. And I just thought, oh, it's so nice to see somebody else speaking about Ciri and getting to know a little bit more about her character.
Yeah, I think like one thing that always sticks out to me about Gretka is that you always can chat to her, but she never really says much else beyond this quest, like late in the game. But she's pretty cool, and I remember that like she's got some pretty funny lines when she's with Ciri with the flashback moments as well.
She's got such a cute little accent as well. I don't know what accent it is, but it's quite it's proper like farmer country accent.
It's like an American one. What would you call?
Do you think?
I don't know. Like it's, as I say, American. It's dumb to say American because I don't know if that just means generally Midwest. Like there's no real accent. Like what you would hear news people be like, national news persons would have this just generic Midwest accent where nothing sounds different than the other one. I don't even know if that's really it. I can't really do it. And so yeah, I guess that's what it is.
It was kind of, it felt like a bit mixed up to me because she sound like, I know what you mean. She gets like this American twang, but then she also gets this real, she'd be like, it's like the Urs. She'd be like a proper farmer. I don't know. I'll have to listen to it again, but it definitely like caught my attention.
I just know that top is absurdly big and Ciri.
Yeah.
I guess she'll grow into it. Geralt meets the Peller and he knows exactly whom that amulet was for. It was for Anna. Dark magic has possessed and stalked her, but he can't do anything without his princess. And I love this massive sigh that Geralt gives, because it's almost like the game is acknowledging to the players, you're kind of about to do a fetch quest, when he asks if he should bring the goat back.
Princess, my goat, she's fled.
Those men must have scared her off. Can we get back to the Augering?
Without the goat, impossible. No goat, won't work.
Will you help me if I bring the goat back?
Princess, princess, where have you got to, girl?
Fine, I'll get your goat.
And I remember when I first played this, I was kind of annoyed at it, because up until this point, there hadn't been any of these quests where it was literally, hey, go grab this thing and bring it back, and then we can continue the story. And I don't know if my expectations had been raised with all the other side quests up to now, but did that stick out to any of y'all?
Honestly, no, but like this was one of my first RPGs I ever really played, to be honest. So I think I was probably going in more open-minded. But I do remember for sure, when I first played it, I couldn't work out how to ring the bell and I had to Google it.
I think for me, I know exactly what you mean, Brett. And I was the same, actually. It's one of the first proper RPGs I've played. And up until now, you've been doing a lot of combat and everything. And then to suddenly be like, yeah, you just literally have to go just round the corner and bring back the goat. And the most annoying thing is she doesn't just simply follow you. So it gets really frustrating.
It's this dangerous strawberries and raspberries, yeah, as the Pillar informs us. Another threat is, Lucy, what do we have to do?
Are we killing more wildlife?
We're killing wolves. Yes.
More wolves.
We're killing more wolves, which now has been a staple. And I did not realize that until actually doing this podcast again. We're just slaughtering wolves, killing wolves. But we then get to kill a bear. So
yeah.
Yay.
That was my first jump scare in this game, which
was
definitely
really
not meant to have jump scares, but I don't know why it scared the shit out of me when this bear showed up.
Well, I guess because you were playing on a little bit harder difficulty. Especially, what difficulty did you play it on? Do you remember?
I think originally probably like not the easiest, but probably just like medium. But like recently I've been playing on Deathmatch on my playthrough I'm doing at the moment.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, I think Lucy's about to start that up again, your next one, right?
I'm going to step it up. Although I know I've been thinking about just changing up to Deathmatch now, because my current playthrough that I'm on, I'm playing on Blood and Broken Bones. I kind of want to just up it. And I feel like maybe when I start Hearts of Stone, maybe I'll just put it up to Deathmatch then.
I think I've also got upscaling on the one I'm playing at the moment, and the rats are a bloody pain, mate.
Yeah, they're like the hardest. They're so OP. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I don't remember that. The rats, like in the sewers of like Novigrad or something?
Yeah, because when you've got upscaling on, they rather than being like level 1 or 5 or whatever they are, they're like, they match your level and they are a real pain.
They just swarm you.
Difficult to hit them.
So we bring Princess back, but we still need a living being's blood. So Geralt brings back this New York City-sized rat, and the Pillar goes into this trance. He sees blood, but not that of Anna or Tamara, but of a child that lives not, but did not die. Geralt quickly deduces that this is a botchling that sucks the blood of pregnant women and eats their fetuses. This is where, to me, the game started to get kicked up into not just macabre, but just really fucking dark.
I think, like you said, yeah, it starts to get quite dark, and especially when you start to learn more about the botchling and how it's created. So it's basically a cursed creature which has been created from the improper burial of an unwanted stillborn infant that then sort of comes back for vengeance, and it's trying to find the people that it's bound to by blood, and like you say, goes between other pregnant women sucking their blood, which is kind of horrible.
Yeah, I can't think of too many things worse than that. And it says that it came from an unwanted stillborn infant. It was definitely a miscarriage as it comes about.
Yeah.
Definitely stillborn. Again, maybe I missed it, but did it seem unwanted?
I don't think so, because I think the Baron and Anna definitely wanted the child, but maybe it sort of felt unwanted because she obviously then abandoned it at the bed and he then gave it an improper burial. So maybe that's what it means by unwanted.
Yeah, the location, the burial wasn't particularly pleasant either. I remember Geralt remarks, and of course it wasn't given a name either.
Yeah, and I guess it was because of domestic abuse that it was stillborn or miscarried. One interesting thing here that I thought came about, when Geralt questions why he should perform this elven custom that the Peller gave him, he gives a thought-provoking answer. The Peller says that spirits have no race, they honor not its meaning. And something in there, just this throwaway line in the middle, to me almost encapsulates The Witcher as a whole. That so much of it is about these differences, is about these racial differences. And it's funny, I never really thought that hard about spirits are not going to have a race. I never thought about that in real life. I never thought about it in The Witcher. And did that stick out to y'all?
I think,
no, it definitely didn't stick out, but it is a really interesting line. And that's what's so great about The Witcher. I think you can play for it many times and there's always new bits of dialogue that you never really picked up on, or like even this sit here, it's like you could really analyze and go deep on this, and it's pretty fantastic. And I think that's one of the biggest strengths of the game.
That's pretty much exactly what I was going to say. I think on my first, my first two playthroughs, I didn't think much of this line, but then when you had written it in the notes, I went back and listened to it. I thought, actually, yeah, that's really interesting to think that the spirits would just sort of be their own. It's like they're their own race at that point. They're not, you know, the spirit of an elf or the spirit of a baby. They're all just one then.
The form, the I'm Roin, the ritual of naming. That's an elven custom. Human, elven, dwarven, ancient. Spirits have no race. They honor not its meaning.
We head back to the Baron, and there is a lot to speak with him about. But first, we have this quick time event to save a man and his horses. If you save the horses and this man, you get 20 crowns. That's really the only difference. But either way, you confront this drunken Baron about abusing his family and driving them away. I'm almost positive when I first did this, I did not help that guy.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think I did. I think I was in a hurry.
I think I did. I have done most playthroughs. And it's like the first time, I don't know why this sticks in my brain so much, but you obviously, you go into the barn or whatever is burning down, and it's the first time I noticed the breath bar that Geralt has. So usually you'd see it when you're swimming. You go in and obviously there's loads of smoke, so you have a certain amount of time, which is one of those things, anything that's timed gives me so much anxiety in these games. So you have a certain amount of time before you run out of breath to get through the barn, save the man and his horses. But yeah, like you said, all that changes is that you get 20 crowns. I don't think it carries much more weight later on in the game.
He loses his breath real quickly, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Maybe that's why. Maybe that's why I didn't do it. Maybe I died and then reloaded and I'm like, fuck this dude.
Maybe. Is it quicker? Is it the same when you're swimming, I think? Because you can get potions that you can hold it for longer. But I wonder if that works in fire as well as when you're swimming.
For some reason, I think swimming lasts a lot longer because I remember, again, the Witcher PTSD, those goddamn drowners, and trying to shoot them, twirling all about. It seems like it was longer than this. The breath seemed to go really quickly. The Baron confesses to abusing Anna, but not Tamara, so yay, and says that when his wife said they were leaving, there was a struggle, and she fell. When he awoke sometime later, there was blood all over the room, and she had miscarried, leaving the remains near the bed. And yeah, Specy, that's what you brought up earlier, was she kind of just abandoned the fetus there, and then the child gets taken out, buried. Geralt explains the botchling could turn to a Lubbockin, that they would be used to help find the family. And this whole time, it's just almost queasiness. It's hard to react, because up until this point, the Baron was this fun-loving guy. He's boisterous. He was super nice to Ciri, super nice to Gretka. And then we're really getting this turn of, oh, this dude was a drunken, abusive man that at this point is almost solely responsible for driving away his wife and daughter and causing a miscarriage.
Yeah, it's a big change, a big curveball, because like you said, you are kind of starting to like this guy, and then it's a massive, massive U-turn almost into thinking he's awful.
At midnight, the grave is empty, and the botchling is on the prowl, and we get another quick time event to either attack it or turn it into a lubberkin. There's really not much you have to do here. If you choose to save it, you either get to save it, or you can just straight up attack it. And if you attack the botchling, the Baron is incensed, and you will need to take the blood to the Peller. Did anybody do this?
I definitely failed quite a few times. So I think from memory, my intention was to save it, but I was really struggling, I think, on my original playthrough. So I think I did, but like I definitely did attack it and like tried fighting it, but then maybe like went back to my old save or whatever to try and actually get the Lubbockin thing.
Yeah, because I think if you try and save it, you have to carry it, or you have to escort the Baron as he carries it back up to the house, And Geralt basically just says, let me know if it starts wriggling and I'll calm it down with some magic. But then it starts to summon a load of wraiths. So you have got a few things to fight before you get back to the house. So it can be a little bit tricky. But I think my first playthrough, I saved it. But like you say, it does take a wee while to get through. And then on my second playthrough, just to see what happened, I killed it. And I much prefer saving it.
But you've got to use Axie on the botchling when the Baron's carrying it. And I just remember like just being sort of sat there in disbelief. What is going on? There's a demon fetus baby that's like got a huge tongue. Baron's holding it up in his arms above his shoulders and saying like all sorts of like funny lines to Geralt. Meanwhile, like you're fighting a bunch of wraiths and using Axie on it. It's like definitely a moment that sticks out to me from when I first played through the game.
I think another thing worth noting was the Baron asks you to lift the curse. Like it really reminded me of, is it Foltest and the Striga?
Yeah.
Where he wants you to lift the curse from the Striga rather than killing it. And he almost begs you, the Baron says, you know, she suffered enough already. Please lift the curse. Please don't kill her. So he really wants you to do that, which I thought was a nice moment. It does show that he cared about this child.
And what stuck out to me the most about it is the umbilical cord that is wrapped up and around. And to me, that almost, if that wasn't there, you could just see this as just deformed, monstrous thing. But with the umbilical cord there, it's like, oh, yeah, this was a fetus. This was to be a child. And it makes it so much worse. But I do agree, Specy, that it's almost comical as you watch the Baron he's holding this botchling straight out. And again, he's a very boisterous, very charismatic guy. And it's just absolute insanity. But the thing about it to me, that burial scene, when you have to bury it and Geralt says the lines and the Baron repeats it, to me is just, it's heart-wrenching. And even the first playthrough, I was very sympathetic to the Baron. Like I think a lot of people may be at first, and then hearing other stories from people and understanding it, it's like, okay, maybe not. But yeah, this song that I named thee Dia and embrace thee as my daughter, the Baron's voice acting is just unbelievable. And as I was rewatching the video, I mean, just straight like tearing up, knowing what it is, but it's just, it just hit me so hard.
What now? Repeat after me. By the powers of earth and sky. By the powers of earth and sky. By the world that was to be your home. By the world that was to be your home. Forgive me, you who came, but who I did not embrace. Forgive me, you who came, but who I did not embrace. I name thee, say her name, and embrace thee as my daughter. I name thee, Daya. And embrace thee as my daughter.
It's such a sad scene because Geralt says the words, you know, they don't carry much meaning with him. And then when the Baron has to repeat them, you can see he starts to break down looking at the horrible creature that should have been his child, Daya. And I totally agree. The voice acting was amazing.
Yeah, it's my favorite scene, I think, in the whole of the game. And that was the moment for me when I didn't really know much, well, really anything about the Witch universe coming into it. And that's really the moment where, you know, I really completely fell in love with the universe, with the game, because it was just pulling at my heartstrings. And I've watched films and TV programs, but I don't think there's really been many moments like that that have really made me feel so emotional. At the time, I was like studying to be a primary school teacher as well. So like even just like learning about like attachment and all these kinds of things as theory, and then just seeing this happen. It's the first and only time to this day that a video game has ever made me cry, actually, was this scene the first time I played it. I think it was just absolutely brilliantly done.
One thing the Baron says is the little one, our little one, was going to make things right. It screams of abusive relationships in which people try to have children to save it. And something came up to where with the unwanted kid, the Baron says that he wanted the baby. And the one thing is, did Anna really want it? Or was that going to tie her to the Baron whom she wanted to leave?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, because I think they've been together for about 20 years at this point, and it sounds like it's maybe always been like this. And maybe if it wasn't for Tamara, she might have already left. And like you say, another baby would just be even more tying, because Tamara's like an adult now almost, isn't she? So if Tamara was to move away and have her own life, Anna might be able to leave. But like you say, she's got a fully grown child and now she's having to start again. So yeah, it could have been completely tying.
So there was an article that came out, and a big reason that I've said before that got me into The Witcher 3 was I got to it late, was I just kept hearing everything about this game, but I explicitly kept hearing stuff about Bloody Baron. And I remember this article, it's from 2015, and I didn't read it all the way through with the first, when I first did it, because I didn't want to be spoiled by anything, but just reading some of it is kind of what drew me into, okay, maybe this game is special. And we will link this in the show notes below, so you can click on that if you want to follow it as well. But lead quest designer of Seta Project Red, Pavel Saska, said, "For me, the story is very personal. I was born in a poor village in the Polish mountains, and in my childhood, I saw families broken by alcohol and violence. Being a child, I saw parents hitting kids and fighting with each other, while at the same time being in love and doing everything for their families." And you don't need to get into anything you don't want to get into. But the closest thing I have of this is my grandfather on my mom's side was an alcoholic, was abusive. My mom was in foster parents. This is a guy that would have grown up during the Depression in Little Rock, Arkansas. So you're talking about the Deep South. Back then, alcoholism was a huge thing. Super hyper religious back then when my mom was growing up in the 50s. And I remember when I was about 12 years old, I'd never met him. My mom took me to meet him and took my brother to meet him. And I remember thinking, why do I want to meet this guy? Like, all I know is he abused you and you had to grow up in foster homes because of it. And so when I read something like that, when he talks about this violence and abuse, it's still something that I can't quite wrap my head around, that dependency. And it is something that I just find incredibly sad. And for them to weave that into this game is just truly incredible.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will be able to not see themselves, but kind of relate. Like you say, you haven't, it's not you that's been through it personally, but if you know, you know, it's very close to you that your mother's been through that and your grandfather's involved, so you'll be able to relate to these stories and these characters on such a deeper level. And there's probably a lot of people, like even the quest designer here, who's seen it. So it's a fantasy game, but it's got very, very real roots and themes through it.
And one thing Sasko says is, in this article, he received a letter sent by a father who had lost his daughter when she was a few months old. In this letter, he wrote about his experience trying to save the Baron's baby daughter, which had turned into a botchling, how desperately he wanted to save her. It was a moving story about him seeking redemption for the Baron, for this character who was carrying his beloved child in his hands. I was incredibly moved when I read it. If there was something we didn't expect, it was these kinds of letters. Players are really touched by what we did, and this is the biggest reward I could ever imagine. And I think that's something there where these people are creating this game and you think it's just a video game. But when you insert this personal stories and almost personal tragedies, the fact that it can touch people across the world over, I'm sure it's happened with other games, but I don't know what else it could have been in. And, you know, like we talked about earlier, especially you said it the same way, this is where you just get hooked on that this is something unique, this is something special, and isn't just another game like Skyrim, Fallout. Those are all great, but there was something special about it, and I think it is largely because of this quest in particular.
Yeah, and I think also it just does a really great job of explaining and just giving you an idea of what the Witcher world's like. You get to know Baron, who you start to think is a really nice bloke, and then you find that he's done all these awful things, but just because he's done awful things doesn't mean he's an awful person. You know, there's a lot more going on. There's no, like, it's not just black and white, like evil and not evil and all those sorts of things that just tie in so well with the Witch universe. And I think they just did a great job with the character of the Baron. And I think you probably leave it a lot of the time thinking he is a bit of a scumbag, but also, you know, if you really like reflect on it, he's an alcoholic. He's been through war. He's clearly not had the easiest of lives. And I think alcohol clearly does change people realistically. Like, I think that's quite evident throughout, you know, recent history, that even in today's society, many people have problems with alcohol, and it might not have even been as commonly known at that point. You know, like, if you're drinking alcohol, that it's going to turn you into a different kind of person. Even these days, when we know the impact that alcohol can have on people, it still, you know, has a massive hold over people's lives and changes them.
So we'll kind of end this on a little bit of a more uplifting note. When the Baron says that he will dig a grave under his threshold for the child, Geralt says if they can't turn it into a lubricant, then they can just bury them there anyway. So there
his face when Geralt says that is a picture.
Oh yeah, he's just, wait, what? Like, you mean this could go south?
I remember when the Lubberkin quest started, and you go from this really emotional scene with, like, as I mentioned, with Baron, like, holding up the botchling above his shoulders, like, wailing out, and then suddenly you're just following this, like, blue spirit fetus ghost that's, like, floating. It's so bizarre. You're like, what is happening in this game I'm playing? It's just quite a surreal feeling.
Yeah, it's very up and down. So the Lubberkin is basically just, it's described as a friendly household guardian spirit. So I think it will now just not haunt, but it will protect the household now that it's been buried and given the proper name of Dea.
Yeah, like a guardian angel.
A guardian fetus. Demon fetus.
Okay, well, yes, it's devolving now into something less protectory, and it doesn't sound quite as like the kid, Mommy, what's that? What's the demon fetus? It's like, oh, that's to protect us? Oh. Yeah, Gretka will have a ball with it. Next up are our corners, where we discuss anything, any topic of interest that the audience may be interested in that we're doing that is not Witcher related. So guest first, Spessy, what is up with you?
Yeah, so I play a lot of Gwent, the Witcher card game. I'm actually going to be working as an analyst at the big event at the end of the year, the Gwent Masters. So it's a big esports tournament. Unfortunately, I'm doing it from my room. I don't get to travel to Poland, but it's happening in early December. So I've been a caster before earlier this year for the first time, but now I'm an analyst. So I have to like analyze the plays and that and say what they could have done better. So a bit of pressure, but it should be pretty fun, different experience. And happy to be involved. That was like my big target at the start of the year to be involved in this event. So we've done it and looking forward to it. Hopefully my internet doesn't drop though, because it's been a little bit dodgy.
Oh no. Oh, that would be a nightmare.
It wouldn't be great, would it?
No. Sounds so cool though. Like, I don't feel like I haven't played much of the standalone Gwent game. So is it literally just a tournament that you're going to be not hosting, but kind of like, what did you say? You're going to be giving tips on what they could have done to win the round, or?
Yeah, so pretty much there's 8 people involved, and I'm just going to be, after each game, I'm going to be like recording some of the highlights from the game. I'm like the Gary Neville of the Gwent, okay. Game, basically, right? But yeah, it's going to be really cool. It's the biggest tournament of the year. I was involved as a commentator, basically, for one of the other events.
Yeah.
And then from the other's perspective, when there was the other Gwent Masters, I was actually involved in like the preparation. One of my friends was playing in that, and I was like helping him prepare for it. So I've gone from that side to now actually like working and analyzing. So it should be pretty interesting. Looking forward to it.
Is that going to be December 4th and 5th?
Yes, yeah, it's on the weekend. So
okay, perfect. Well, that's actually going to be tomorrow, because this episode will be out December 3rd, nice. Friday, December 3rd. So perfect. This will be this weekend. It'll be from the CDPR Twitch channel,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah.
All right, Lucy, what do you have going on?
So mine is not super exciting this week, but I think Brett and I recorded on Monday and now it's Friday. And between those 2 days, I have done nothing but work from home. And I just kind of want to talk about it a little bit. I'm not sure what you guys do for work, or since lockdown, I've went from working in the office 5 days a week and being around people all the time. And now I'm doing a lot of working from home. I sometimes go for like 8 to 10 days working from home and not going to the office. So I just kind of wanted to know what you guys have been doing. Have you been like doing a lot of working from home? Because I go for days where I love it, and then there's times where I just can't stand it, and it's a real up and down process for me.
Especially, why don't you go first?
Yeah, it's a weird one for me. So I was working as a primary school teacher when the first lockdown happened. So I had like a little class to kids that I'd see their faces every day. Mm-hmm. And then I actually started a new job like during the lockdown. Like I started at a brand new school, but I was working from home. So I was like meeting all the other teachers, and they're like, oh, is that a gaming chair you've got there? I was meeting them all over Zoom. That was an experience. But then since December, I've been working like on content creation full time. So I've gone from seeing like a load of happy faces every day to like, I don't really see people that often. So it's definitely the face-to-face contact that's the big downer on it.
Yeah, it can be really isolating. Like you say, you go from seeing so many people every day. And I think it's the people that, like, I've got my friends from work who I obviously speak to all the time. And then I notice that I start to miss the little interactions with people that you wouldn't necessarily make a point to stay in touch with. So there's like some people at work that I just see in the kitchen and you have a quick little natter on and then that's it. And I think that was kind of the social interaction that I really started to miss. But we're back in the office 2 days a week now. So it is nice to get a balance because working from home can be really great.
Definitely. I think like humans aren't built either to be working over screens and communicating over screens. There's something about actually seeing someone in the flesh, and you know, that's just what we kind of need. That is what we're programmed and wired to work that way. So even though like having things like Discord and, you know, all these online communities have been an absolute godsend for me personally, you can't really replace like that face-to-face contact.
So I'm pretty much right in the middle of that, where last year when I was a public high school teacher, we were split. And so I'd have a class of, say, 30 kids. There would be 5 in the classroom and 25 on Zoom or Google Meets or whatever it is. So I had that last year. And some people also know this. I went through a massive breakup in February. Mm-hmm. And so COVID basically ended all of that. But right now, no, I'm substitute teaching. I should be in 3 days on Monday. I should be signing a contract to go back to teaching in January. So,
that's so exciting.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'll be doing something new, psychology. I've never taught psychology. So that'll be something new to do that I really need to. That's what we'll be spending December doing, is crash coursing psychology to be able to teach that. But everything, every school around here is, it's all in person. It's Texas. There's no masks. Like, you know, there hasn't really been a mask mandate in Texas for, Christ, I don't know, a year?
Right.
Or something like that. I don't know. So everything here is basically normal, if you will. Mercifully and very luckily, I guess, to other places in the country, teachers are counted as frontline workers. And so I got my booster, the COVID booster, the third shot, about a month ago. But the online teaching just absolutely broke me. And it's a big reason why I left and actually was planning on staying out a year. So the online, I just can't do it. And even just be on a computer that much, I have to get out. I've really tried to be online a lot less in general. That's kind of why a lot of Discord channels I've kind of just been completely absent from. And even my personal Twitter, I don't even really use that much, because it was starting to break me of just being in this small room that I'm in. The biggest thing I can tell people is if they're able, just go outside and walk outside for as little as 30 minutes. And like I said, I got addicted to hiking this summer by doing it. And you never know what you might find, as long as it's safe. Some people, it's not safe to go out at night or at any time there. So yeah, make sure you use discretion. So what I had was a Thanksgiving / cooking. We're recording this the day after Thanksgiving. I absolutely love to cook. It's another thing that I've really picked up in this new life of mine. And I just want to ask y'all, do y'all like to cook anything? And if you do, what is your number one dish that you'd hang your hat on?
I am a bit of a connoisseur when it comes to beans on toast.
Nice.
I literally saw today someone tweet out that when people start bagging on Thanksgiving from British people, all they say is beans on toast. Is that like an actual thing?
Do you not have beans on toast?
No, we don't eat beans for breakfast, no.
Like baked beans?
We don't eat beans for breakfast.
Oh, here, baked.
Oh, beans on toast isn't really breakfast.
Oh, it's not? Okay. Oh, okay.
Any time of the day. I'd have it any time of the day.
If I was going to have breakfast, I'd probably like have at least like an egg or something with it, but definitely dinner, just like some beans on toast, mate. You can't really go wrong. Like, speaking of Thanksgiving, I have been known to do a pretty good pecan pie, actually. Because I knew quite a few Americans when I was at university. I actually dated an American, and she taught me how to do a really good pecan pie. So I've got that in my locker.
Okay, I tell you what, that's straight Texas cred right there. Because pecans are pecans are like the number one thing here. Yeah, pecan pie would be the number one Texan dessert. Would be that. So yeah, if you make a good one of that, you got a little Texas card.
You're
right
welcome.
There. Yeah,
I'm worried it might not hold up, but I back myself. I did learn from an American, so it should be good.
But English breakfasts, they do have beans, right? Traditional English breakfast?
Yeah, yeah. I'm a big fan of beans, I have to say. Beans, egg, can't really go wrong, man.
So good.
The only time I've had a full-on English breakfast was when it was like 6 or 7 in the morning, probably 12 years ago, I went up to this Trinity Pub in Dallas to watch this Man United game. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get the whole English breakfast. And they just, this plate of slop just gets down, and it was a big sausage. It was beans. It was an egg. It was like an over easy egg. Does that sound about right?
I don't actually know what is an over easy egg. Is that a fried egg?
Over easy.
It's just a fried egg, but you flip it slightly.
Yeah, it's a runny yolk, right?
Yeah, it's where you flip it slightly. In fact, I had one this morning. So you just fry it normally, but then like you just flip. So you fry the yolk side for like maybe like 5-10 seconds.
Yeah.
So the yolk's still runny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't like look as, it looks a bit more cooked basically.
Okay, now I'm getting hungry.
One of my favorite things on a breakfast actually is a habit I picked up from a few of my Irish friends is like potato cakes. I've never made them myself, but some potato cakes go very well with breakfast.
I was going to say, like, there's the English breakfast and then there's the Ulster fry, which is like a Northern Irish thing where I'm from. So it's pretty much like all the bare bones is the same, but then you've got potato bread or potato cakes and then like soda bread as well, which is
just that's the other one.
Perfect.
Okay, I'm looking at potato cakes. Look at this kind of like fried.
Yeah. Potato bread. Let me see if I can get it. Do you know what? When somebody, I always say potato bread's amazing, and then somebody says to me, what is it? And I'm like, I don't know. It just looks so good.
I don't have time to describe that. Yeah, okay. So yeah, it looks like, because that's like almost hash browns. Y'all ever heard of those?
Yeah, we have hash browns at McDonald's, but it's not, if I had to pick between hash browns or like potato cakes every day, mate.
Yeah, potato cakes here, mashed potatoes, sour cream, ham, bacon, ranch. That sounds like a lot. Onion, egg. Oh yeah, I might have to pull that out. Maybe the air fryer. I'm obsessed with the air fryer.
Is it worth it?
Yeah.
Because I sometimes think, is it not just like a small oven?
I mean, it's, again, you mainly do it for stuff you'd fry, and it's just beyond healthier.
Right.
Like I made fried chicken like traditionally in just all that oil. And then I made, it was chicken parmesan, air fried chicken parmesan. And it was so good. And the cleanup's so much easier. That's another thing too. I hate fucking cleaning up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be such a big advantage because I hate cleaning.
I might have burned myself too on that fried chicken on the oil.
Oh, no.
My dumbass. If you're listening on Apple, please rate and review the podcast. It means a lot to the analytics and helps with searches. It's only going to take you about 10, 15, 20 seconds. Please give a 5-star review. If you're not going to give a 5-star review, then don't review it. Okay. If it's not 5-star, then just don't do it. Okay. But review it. If it's a good review, a positive one, hell, I'll read it. You can find us on Twitter at Witcher Podcast, or you can email us at witcherpod@gmail.com. Speci, again, thank you so much for being here. Had a blast. Where can people find you?
Yeah, pleasure. Thank you for having me. I stream on Twitch every day. Sometimes Witcher 3, often it's Gwent, and I'm twitch.tv/specimen. I've got a YouTube and a Twitter as well, which is just specimen.
Are you still putting up some decks on YouTube, Gwent decks?
Yeah, I upload like every day, but I'm also like looking at doing Witcher Season 2 on my YouTube channel. I want to cover it, like start branching beyond Gwent, because there's kind of a ceiling. There's like a limited amount of people that watch Gwent stuff, and my channel's not really able to grow much more anymore. So Witcher Season 2 is something I've got my eye on.
Well, this is an open invitation that come back for Season 2 episode anytime you want.
Sounds like a winner. Thank you.
Lucy, where can we find you?
So I am Lucy J. Robin on pretty much all platforms, but you'll find me mainly on Twitch and Twitter, and we'll pop my Discord link in the show notes as well.
All right. It looks like for some reason I deleted my contact info here. I don't know why I did that. You can find me on Twitter at TheFoxBride4 or on Twitch at TheFoxBride. Join us next time on The Path as we learn more about family matters and just get sadder and sadder.